Against all odds, we have scratched and ducked and dived and clawed our way past a plethora of Big Two podcasts to make it all the way to episode 2 of the Wrestling Podcast. That's wrestling spelled W-R-S-T-L-I-N-G, all of the graps without the E. This man is Gareth.
Hello.
My name is Liam. You are on the Inside the Ropes podcast network. Welcome back for episode 2. And just before we get going, a huge thank you to everybody that tuned in last week for our very first episode. We are genuinely overwhelmed by the support. Loved getting your tweets, loved getting your recommendations. In fact, Gareth, why don't you hit us with a couple of the recommendations that guys have passed on to us?
Yeah, so we had a few really good recommendations, actually. For instance, CMLL.
Oh, yeah.
We had Choco Pro. I don't even know much about them. That's Emi Sakura, also of AEW fame's promotion.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
So. Part of like Gato Move, like a little offshoot is my understanding of Gato Move out in Japan.
Okay, nice.
And so they run no ring shows.
Oh, okay. Oh, that is interesting.
So Chris Brooks wrestles there quite regularly as well, just to give people a bit of a hook. All their shows are on YouTube, so you can earn for free, so you can just set up like a little... If you subscribe to their channel, they'll send you a little notification whenever they're going live.
If it's free, we'll definitely cover it. Yeah,
exactly. And then, also Uncanny Attractions, which is a drag wrestling show.
Oh wow! Okay, very good. Yeah, sounds good. Great suggestions. So, thank you to everybody for those, and please do keep them coming in. Genuinely, we will pick up every one of those at various points across the season. So, anyway, what's on tap today? Well, two big shows indeed. Impact Wrestling's Victory Road Special, and indeed Stardom's Yokohama Cinderella. So we're going to look at Impact first. This one was available on Impact Plus and a number of other places as well, actually. Impact really are spreading themselves quite wide, particularly here in the UK. Just to give you guys a bit of background, if you haven't watched Impact before, it's a promotion that's been going on for quite a long time now, and for the largest portion of their history, they really were considered the number two promotion in America, not dissimilar to the spot that AEW has now. They were formed back in 2002 under the name NWA Total Nonstop Action, and that was by Jeff and Jerry Jarrett. They had a rebrand in 2004 to Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. Rebrand is a recurring theme with Impact. They did eventually become Impact Wrestling outright in 2017. And to be honest with you, they've produced some of the most well-known wrestlers in the world today, or at least they've cultivated them, if not produced outright. So we're talking the likes of AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, and they've also been a really great promotion for rehabbing stars. So people that maybe haven't quite made it elsewhere, they've gone to Impact and they've reinvented themselves and gone on to bigger and better things. Best case in point I can offer you is Drew McIntyre. So they've got a lot of strength to them as a promotion. There have been issues, particularly a period of time when Dixie Carter, Hulk Hogan, and Eric Bischoff of WCW fame took control of the leadership back in 2010. I think it's widely regarded that the wheels slightly fell off at that point, which is a bit of a shame. But under the new management of Don Callis and Scott D'Amore, both former wrestlers now turned promoters, by and large, the reviews for Impact Wrestling are quite positive. I actually think their in-ring is very, very good. And they are a promotion that people should give a chance to. So very excited to talk about this show. Gareth, what was your takeaway?
It was nice to be back watching a big time Impact show after such a long time. I've dipped in and out of Impact's weekly TV product that's available on demand on Five here and there recently. But it was nice to actually sit down and watch somewhat pay-per-view caliber card after so long. You know, I used to follow Impact and before that TNA very, very closely from when it originally formed in 2002, probably up until the attempted Monday Night Wars when Hogan and Bischoff came back in was when I switched off and sort of haven't really been back properly since. So yeah, it was good to be back. Some stars from when I originally watched still knocking around for good and for bad. Overall, for me, it was a thumbs in the middle kind of show. You know, like it had some really good points, but it did have some stuff that did drag it down for me personally.
Yeah, I think my overall feeling after watching this show was it was a very easy watch. I wouldn't say there was anything on there that was particularly bad, but I don't think it ever had aspirations beyond being a good show. It never really made its way up to great. But again, a perfectly pleasant watch and some good stuff to get involved with. So maybe we'll start there. So what did you enjoy off of this one?
the women's stuff primarily, yes. which is where I think Impact are probably strongest, and their women's division is probably what's become their calling card these days. Years gone by, it was their X division, which is, for the uninitiated, the X division is not unlike a cruiserweight division, but there's actually no weight limits. It's about no limits, is how they'd always phrase it. So you've had people, you know, 300 pounds holding that title. It's more of a stylistic thing. It's that fast-paced, high-hitting stuff. Yeah. What was, when TNA started, what was that high-level indie style of wrestling? It was bringing that into a national promotion, but now that's kind of how everybody wrestles.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably why the X Division title isn't as prominent, because when everybody can wrestle like that, of course it's going to lose its shine.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I really enjoyed the women's stuff. I think, for me, the stuff that the Impact do with their women, seemingly, is that it's not just sending them out and having good matches week in, week out. It's that there's a lot of story and lore and backstory to the feuds and interactions. Because I think you could sometimes accuse NXT's women division of just being like, well, they've got all the best women's wrestlers in the world stockpiled there, and it's just changing one out for another and sending them out there and having really great matches.
Yeah, it's almost like a work rate division.
No bad thing. I always enjoyed watching their women's division, but it's nice that all of the characters in the Knockouts division, which is what Impact calls its women's division, the Knockouts division, have character hooks.
Yeah, definitely.
The two women's matches were definitely the standout for me.
Okay, well, let's have a deep dive on both of those then. So the first match on the card was Tennille Dashwood, formerly Emma in WWE, taking on Jordynne Grace. So Tennille's hook is that she's almost a bit of an Instagram celebrity, I suppose, at this point. She has her own...
Yeah, like an influencer. Yeah.
She's got her own personal photographer, who doesn't have a camera, by the way. He's taking it on his phone. I mean, if you're paying a guy to be your photographer and he turns up with his phone, like, imagine if it's your wedding and the guy just rocks up with his phone. I mean, am I just being old here?
He doesn't even have a ring light.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
You know, you can take those pictures on your phone, but you need a ring light.
I'm busy trying to suspend my disbelief over here. I mean, at least make half the effort.
The camera work by Impact, they were filming over his shoulder while he was taking photos, and then his phone screen was cracked, which did make me laugh. So I do think, whilst I like the character and the character hook, they do need to maybe spend the dollars to make it a little bit more high level.
Yeah, agreed. But it did grow on me, that whole thing. I liked Tennille posing, you know, mid-match, and more often than not, that kind of thing leads to a character losing, but in this case she actually won the match. The wrestler that she was against is somebody that I'm a big fan of, and this is Jordynne Grace. I would say her kind of thing is that she's basically really strong. And having watched her a couple of times recently, I actually think she's something of a freak athlete, because she's so explosive. I don't think there's anybody else like her in the whole of women's wrestling. The way, the sort of fast twitch muscle fiber kind of stuff, the A to B moving from corner to corner, she's so quick. She hits so hard. I'm a big, big fan of Jordynne Grace, and I thought she's probably the most consistent wrestler in the Impact roster at present, I would say. Is that too big a claim?
Oh, that's interesting to hear. Just, I don't know if you've seen sort of results since Victory Road, but it does look like she is being positioned to wrestle the X Division title.
Yeah. So where you were saying earlier that, you know, where everybody wrestles with that kind of high-flying style, that the X Division maybe doesn't quite have the same hook that it did, this, I think, is a really good step towards re-establishing it as something different. You know, make it a bit of an intergender division. There's no reason why you can't. There's no limits, as they always say. So I think Jordynne Grace is probably the perfect person to spearhead that. Really excited to see what she does in that one, actually.
Definitely. I think that's going to make for... Because we're going to be covering that when time comes around. We're going to be covering Bound for Glory.
Indeed. Yep.
So I'm sure we'll have a lot more to say about Jordynne Grace come then.
Indeed.
But we've been very lucky seeing her wrestle in the UK a number of times, and yeah, she's just knocked out of the park every time I've seen her.
Absolutely.
Most notably taking part in a crazy six-person brawl in the Electric Ballroom.
Yeah, gosh.
With her, I believe, fiancé, Jonathan Gresham.
Her husband now.
And Chris Brooks. Her husband now, yeah.
Congratulations.
Husband. and against Eddie Kingston and Proud and Powerful.
Oh my gosh.
PNP.
That was an insane match. And she's an absolute badass, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I would say track that down if you can.
Yeah, that's a progress show. Do check it out. The other knockouts match was for the title, actually. So this is Deonna Purrazzo, again, formerly of NXT. Don't remember her actually being featured all that much, but since she's come to Impact, she's been incredible. She's been positioned right off the bat as somebody that is of such a high level that pretty much nobody else in the division can keep up with her, at least not technically anyway. She won the Knockouts title in reasonably short order, and this is one of her defenses against a character named Susie. And just to give you a bit of background on this one, Susie was formerly Sue Young, otherwise known as the Undead Bride. Give it a quick Google if you haven't seen her before. She looks absolutely crazy. But I think Sue Young has since been, the character of Sue Young has since been repressed, and what we have in her place is this kind of slightly vacant but very friendly Susie, who is maybe not quite the wrestler that Sue Young is, but isn't a psychopathic demon. So, you know,
it's a bit of a trade-off.
It is indeed. Yeah, this is the actor in me, but I absolutely adore what Susie does. She's so committed to that character. The way she looks around, all the facial expressions are fantastic. Even the responses to the moves are in character. It's, yeah, really, really good stuff.
Obviously someone that has great grasp of character, mm-hmm. and how to portray that even through selling, yes. through her moves, the stuff that isn't, you don't traditionally think of when you think of character work.
And it's such a rarity.
So yeah, I think she's really got that down pat. And one thing I was thinking about during the course of this match is that all of the characters that she was interacting with in this segment, so you've got Deonna, who is relatively new to Impact, you've got Kimberly, who also was in NXT for a short while, was in Mae Young Classic as well, and you also had Kylie Rae, who had a very short run with AEW. Mm-hmm. All of them are relative newcomers to Impact, and so I think it works really well that they're all interacting with Susie, because they don't know just how dangerous Sue Young was. So you've got them one way or another. All of these other characters are not taking her as seriously as they might if they were more tenured performers in Impact that knew really what was going on.
Yeah, that's a really good thought, actually.
So you've kind of got Kylie Rae being like, oh no, she, you know, why is everyone scared of her? You know, she's lovely. And then you've got the heel team who are just kind of like, oh, you know, what's the big deal? Mm.
Yeah, no, that's a great shout. It makes a lot of sense. When, and it is a when, not an if, she finally turns back into Sue Young. Yeah, I think it's going to get a little bit crazy. I'm here for it. Looking forward to that one.
Do we think that Kylie's going to take the title at Bound for Glory? No. You think it's going to carry on? Is it going to be perhaps Sue Young defending the honour of her friend, her trusting friend, Kylie,
yeah,
post?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's my thoughts exactly. Yeah.
It's called Victory Road, but I am kind of looking forward to the stuff that it is promising me further down the road.
Yeah, I kind of think that's partly what this was about. It was a good show on its own steam, but it was really more about building things for Bound for Glory, and it probably did do a good job of that, to be fair.
Because you had the two big title matches, the results were just completely telegraphed because you know you had their challenges for Bound for Glory already lined mm-hmm. up, so it would have been a real swerve for the sake of a swerve to have had the challengers take the titles at this event.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. A couple other things just elsewhere on the card. I really enjoyed the Fatal 4-Way match. So this was at Bound for Glory. There's going to be four tag teams competing for the tag team titles. That's the Motor City Machine Guns, Ace Austin and Madman Fulton, the Good Brothers and the North. And here we took one member of each of those teams and put them in a 4-way match. The Motor City Machine Guns are comprised of Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin. And quite frankly, you had me at Alex Shelley because he was involved in this match. And this guy is just brilliant. I've loved Alex Shelley for a long time now. He's one of the best technical wrestlers in the world. And he's actually one of the biggest innovators, probably, of indie wrestling. I think him and a guy named The Amazing Red, back in the early noughties, they were doing things on the independent scene that nobody else was doing. But nowadays, when you watch things like NXT or AEW, the moves that they do or the transitions that they formulated are commonplace. They are such innovators in the game, and it's great to see Shelley back in an Impact Wrestling ring.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, really pleased to see Alex Shelley again back on my TV. He's the guy, when we were teenagers and we were backyard wrestling, I would just want to steal all of his moves. I liked him enough that when TNA released their first toy line, I bought an Alex Shelley action figure. That's the only TNA action figure I've got anywhere. It must be knocking around somewhere. I've just got like heaps of mid-2000s wrestling paraphernalia in boxes somewhere. Yep. So I absolutely love having him back on the scene.
Big time. And that was a really fun four-way match. Yeah, really worth going out and having a look at. The other guy I wanted to point out for that match was Ace Austin. Have you seen much of Ace before, Gareth?
Just bits and pieces from the other Impact TV shows that I've kind of been watching the last... basically, during lockdown has been when I've dug back into Impact here and there. And so, yeah, I've kind of seen bits and pieces of him, like in the lead up to Slammiversary, him gearing up for his title match and stuff since then leading up to this. But I wasn't aware of him before tuning into Impact.
Yeah, he's somebody that I think is going to be a really big deal. I mean, he's already a big-ish deal, but he's going to be a really big deal. He's very smooth in the ring. His moves are very slick, and the way he moves around is great. He's got a lot of charisma as well, and he's one of those guys I touched upon last week that puts a slight twist on some of the moves that he does, and I love it when guys do that. So, yeah, big fan of Ace Austin. Enjoyed this four-way match. Anything else to discuss, or shall we move on?
Just with that one, I do think it was a missed opportunity just not to make it a straight fatal four-way rather than have them tag in and out.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
The rules of that just seem a bit silly.
Okay, so I know what you're saying, and I remember thinking that at the start as well. And even at the point where, in a normal tag team match, you would do the hot tag spot where, you know, the guy is crawling over to their partner and both make the tag at the same time. That happened here in that four-way match, and it did jar me for a second. But then I thought, if we're talking about building up to a big tag team match, maybe it kind of works. It's, you know, that they're all tag teams and they are reverting to type here, hence the hot tag spot. I don't know. Am I giving them too much leeway? Maybe. Probably.
It was good on its own terms. But I would have liked to have seen it just as a standard four-way for my money.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. One other thing I wanted to mention as well is the incredible longevity of Tommy Dreamer, who was on this card as well. He's been around for such a long time, and his career win-loss ratio must look terrible. But yet, he's never presented as a jobber, and I think that's a real art form. So fair play to Tommy Dreamer. I don't know if you caught it, but at one point, he was against Brian Myers, the former Curt Hawkins in WWE. Dreamer hit the sky high, and when Myers kicked out of two, he said to the ref, "That's worked for D'Lo for years," which I thought was wonderful. And it took me back to when we were kids watching WWF with our friend Stuart, and we were watching Batista, and he hit somebody with a spine buster and won the match, and Stuart was dismayed. He turned to us and said, "Well, it never worked for Farouk." I mean, it's a valid point, but I got an immediate flashback to that. So anyway, good stuff. Nice to see Tommy Dreamer. So elsewhere, for the aforementioned X Division title, we had the Defeat Rohit Challenge with Rohit Raju up against Willie Mack. What did you make of this one?
I really like Willie Mack. Mm. He seems supremely likable. I think he's got a good look. He's good in the ring. Again, he's an example of that X Division, you know, no weight limit mentality. He can really go.
Okay, so I like Willie Mack as well. I think he's really decent, and I've liked him in other places. But one thing that really strikes me is that I feel like Willie Mack only ever gets so far in a promotion. And he, you know, he starts off particularly hot because he's a big-ish guy that can do some incredible things. And as you say, he's innately likable. But I feel like he has a bit of a ceiling. And I was thinking about it in this match, and it is a bit of a weird comparison coming your way. But he reminds me a bit of Sanada in New Japan, in that he seemingly only has one gear emotionally. There's no emotional urgency to Willie Mack. There's no emotional urgency to Sanada. Their facial expressions are, generally speaking, you know, a bit blank. You know, there's a little bit of fire, but I don't think they emote enough for that to come across to the audience. And as such, they remain in those kind of mid to upper mid card positions. That was just my analysis at 4 a.m. What did you make?
Interesting. So I've not seen enough necessarily to comment on that. So I think I'm going to be watching Willie through that lens now going forward to see if I agree. And maybe we can come back to this when we cover Bound for Glory.
Yeah, he's a guy that I would like to see employ an acting coach and just get a little bit more out, because he's amazing and I want to see him do well. But yeah, let's keep an eye on it on Bound for Glory. And also, everybody listening, let me know your thoughts. What do you think? Willie Mack, Sonata, are we onto something there, or is it utter nonsense? So overall, I think I would give this one, you know, I would describe it as solid. It's probably the best way I could describe it, and a very good setup for Bound for Glory. So it definitely achieved its goal in that regard. All right, man, we move.
In this half of the show, we're going to be talking about Stardom's most recent show, Yokohama Cinderella. Stardom is a all-women's promotion in Japan, a Joshi promotion. They were founded in 2010. They are owned by the same owners as New Japan Wrestling, so they're considered a sister promotion. They're primarily driven by the various stables, much like New Japan is, to be honest. So you have several notable stables within Stardom. So you've got Queen's Quest, who are sort of a tweener faction. You've got Odeo Tai, who are the baddies, the heels. You've got Stars, who are the baby faces. And you've got Donna del Mondo, or Women of the World. Their goal is disruption. They're led by Julia. And then you did have, up until this show, you had Tokyo Cyber Squad, which was led by Hana Kimura, who unfortunately passed away earlier this year. They disbanded as of this show. But yeah, those are the factions that lead the storytelling process. So yeah, this show obviously is like built around number of title matches. But one of the matches was two members of Odeo Tai versus two members of Tokyo Cyber Squad, with the losing faction having to disband.
Oh God, are we going to go straight into this one? Oh my word.
We don't have to. It was pretty emotional.
No, you're here. I'll try and hold it back. Oh my word, this was a tough one. Like, it was a great match, but it was a tough one.
Absolutely, it was a good match. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, like, it was anything goes match. Sort of that saw tables and chairs come into things, and you saw beyond the competitors in the match, which was Jungle Kiona and Konami for representing Tokyo Cyber Squad against Natsuko Tora and Saki Koshima on the Odeo Tai side of things. You also saw the other members of those factions get a little bit involved in the match as well.
You know, one of the big selling points of this match, I suppose, was the participation of Jungle Kiona, because she, I would describe as the beating heart of Stardom. And for anybody that's watch Stardom for any great length of time, she's a real sort of core fan's favorite. But a bit like Tomohiro Ishii over in New Japan, despite putting on great matches and being almost universally adored, never wins the big one. So there's a lot of sympathy towards Jungle Kiona, and that was really leaned upon in this match.
She's so likable. In the few shows that I've seen her on, some of the 5-star Grand Prix, which was the tournament that Stardom have run recently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really enjoyed her performances. She was one of the people that made me really sort of sit up and watch every time she was on screen.
Yeah, agreed. And also her tag team partner Konami was another one who really stood out to me in that tournament. But no longer can we talk about Konami with any sort of positive inflection whatsoever. Because towards the end of this match, she turned on Jungle Kiona, absolutely dealt her a chair shot, and cost her the match, and therefore disbanding the Tokyo Cyber Squad, which was sad in its own right. But my word, I mean, look, the Hana Kimura situation earlier in the year was so sad. I mean, it's sad when anybody passes away, but that was just terrible because she was so young. And it really did feel like watching Kiona genuinely weep in the ring after this match. It felt very real, like it was almost her saying goodbye. It was actually, in a way, it was quite a hard watch, but it was pure theatre in another sense. It was very moving, it was very, very sad, and as the news was reported, Jungle Kiona is actually going to be out for some time now dealing with some injuries, but one hopes that when she comes back, you know, she's given a royal welcome and is allowed to go on to the bigger and better things.
Yeah, I really hope so. It just seems sort of terribly unfair and such horrible timing that her body's sort of given out on her like that. Yeah. But, you know, how long has she been nursing these injuries, I wonder? Were they caused over the course of this weekend of wrestling, or are these issues that she's had for a little while, I wonder?
Yeah, well, she was covered in tape. I don't know if you noticed.
Mm, I did, yeah, yeah.
Not dissimilar to over in pro wrestling, no. If you look at Go Shiozaki, I mean, that man is held together by tape.
More tape than man.
He's still a wonderful wrestler, but my word, yeah, he's nursing some injuries. Anyway, back to Stardom. So yeah, that was a good one, emotionally heavy. But I think that's the thing that I would say about this show, is that it was a very much a variety show. There was a bit of this, there was a bit of that. There was this big emotionally heavy storyline. There was some hard-hitting matches, brutally hard-hitting matches. There was some incredible, what you describe as like cruiserweight-style matches. It really did have something for everyone, this show.
The opening contest between between Azumi and Starlight Kid.
Oh my god!
Yeah. I absolutely adored, like right off the bat. Like
I was going mad for this match.
Yeah, I went absolutely crazy for it, and to the point where Stardom actually have got this match for free on YouTube.
Oh wow!
I started sending it to some people at about 2 a.m. Just oh, like, you need to watch this match.
Let's retweet it. Let's send the link out.
We'll definitely forward that on to you listeners.
Oh, yeah.
It's well worth a watch and, you know, like a good starting point, perhaps, for the world of Stardom.
Yeah, tell us what you think of this one. So much cool stuff that transpired in this match. Almost too much to mention, but it was so fast. So incredibly fast. You know, it's called high speed for a reason, and boy, they were moving quick.
Azumi hit a double stomp from the top rope. I just put Finn Balor to absolute shame.
Oh my god, yeah, it looked like she just landed. She went straight through her, basically.
Nailed poor Starlight Kid. And
they did an incredible Code Red spot as well, which was fantastic. Do you know what this reminded me of? I got real Halloween Havoc 97 vibes. Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero, right down to the color scheme.
Interesting.
Rey was wearing purple that day, Eddie was wearing gold. And this one was just, it was almost like that. I, do you know what? I don't think I've ever seen a match for at this pace, for the duration. It was astonishing.
Funny you say that, because when I was thinking about this match, the thing that I was mentally comparing it to was SummerSlam 2002, Rey Mysterio versus Kurt Angle.
Oh, okay.
In terms of being just an absolutely, like, mind-blowing opening contest.
Yeah, sure.
That just set the pace for the rest of a fantastic show.
Yep, very good. Indeed, yeah. Do check that one out, people, and let us know what you think.
We could go through, I think, almost every match on this card and have something supremely positive to say about it.
Yeah.
But the other one for me that I absolutely adored was Tam versus Julia.
Oh, my word.
Was the other match that really hit the spot for me.
What an incredible match this was. Basically, this is a show full of incredible matches. I mean, if you've got a spare £10, $10, whatever the currency, if you have it spare this month, then I recommend you hop on a Stardom World, buy yourself a month's worth of Stardom, and watch this show. Genuinely, it was that good. I would recommend you go do it. Yeah, getting back to the match, so, so good. Tam Nakano is she's an idol, so part of the idol culture in Japan, which, as I understand it, it's kind of like, it's quite a cute pop stars, dancers, and more with alarming regularity, it seems they move into professional wrestling, and she's very, very good, and really plays up to that. Julia, on the other hand, as the leader of the Donna Del Mundo stable, is a very cool, quite edgy, shade of greyish kind of heel. The two personalities gelled very well here, and the thing that always jumps off the screen to me about Julia is her stage presence.
Yes.
Oh my word! I mean, there are people in the wrestling world that have less stage presence as a direct result of the amount of stage presence that Julia has. It's as if she's sapped extra from the pool, meaning that certain people can't do it. It's just incredible. She really just, she owns the stage when she comes out on it. It's incredible to see.
My first note I made whilst I was watching this was literally just, God damn, Julia is such a star.
Yeah, she is. She is. She's such a star. Absolutely. And this match, I mean, wow, it's so hard hitting. And it's interesting as well, because there was this match, the following match, which was the main event, was Mayu Iwatani against Shuri, And that was also hard-hitting, but in an entirely different way. So this one was all about big blockbuster moves.
Just so much brutal. Top rope stuff.
Oh my word. So much top rope stuff. It was, the note I've got here is, like an Ishii match. That's what it felt like. And Jesus Christ, does Tam Nakano, who looks like the cutest thing possible, does she ever hit hard when she was smacking Julia in the face? Jeepers. Oh my word. Yeah, good stuff.
I feel like they almost spent half the match on the top ropes.
Yeah, definitely. The other notes that I had were top rope German, which looked brutal.
Oh, that looked disgusting.
And even better, top rope octopus hold.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
Oh my word, very
into
good.
A code red sunset powerbomb.
Yeah, so much to like here. But then, do you get what I'm saying about the main event? It was hard-hitting, possibly even more hard-hitting, but it wasn't moves so much, it was strikes.
Yeah, the main event, the Mayu versus Suri, it gave me a new appreciation for forearms to the chest, like just the noises those things were making. Like, it seemed like they were just knocking the absolute stuffing out of one another.
This genuinely got to the point where it was uncomfortable to watch in the best possible way, but the kicks that Suri was giving to Mayu... I think Shuri actually has an MMA background, and you could tell. I mean, she was laying those things in, and there's nowhere to hide. That's not a worked noise or a gimmick noise. That is just shin on chest, and good Lord, it sounded like a gun went off every single time.
It was just a very noisy match.
It was. I'm all for that, though. I'm all for that. Another element of the Julia match, which I really, really loved, was she had Tam locked in a submission hold, a brutal-looking submission hold, for so long. And I've never seen a referee get more animated or more involved in a portion of the match than this. I mean, he called a timeout at one point, he kept checking with Tam to make sure she was okay, and he was literally shouting like yes or tap, and you know, it was so animated and it felt so desperate, and she looked like she was dead. Yeah, it looked like it was over, and when she finally made her way out of it was incredible. It was a real big moment. So that, in fact, in a match that was full of big moments, so yeah, I was very impressed with that.
So that ended with Julia won, hitting her finish in a fantastic contest. Tam just couldn't overcome the big blockbuster moves from Julia.
Yeah.
And that was very back and forth, that match.
Mm.
But sort of Mayu versus Suri felt quite one-sided.
Yeah.
Suri really was in control for the bulk of the match, really just destroying poor Mayu.
Oh, God.
She got some offense in, hit a couple of really nice German suplexes. She got a desperation tombstone at one point. Mm. She hit beautiful moonsault, but yeah, like, Suri just kept kicking out, kept kicking out.
And kept kicking her. Jeez, did she keep kicking her.
Mayu retained in that match, finishing Suri off with a variation of a dragon suplex. They've already announced her next defense as well, so she's just about held on to that. She managed to nearly trip over the trophy she was awarded at the end of the match as well, which really tickled me. So elsewhere on the show as well, we talked about on the last episode, there are a couple of Tokyo Joshi Pro competitors that had let their contracts expire and had become freelancers. And we saw both of them debut on the show.
Absolutely.
Which, yeah, you know, we'd speculated was likely to be the case.
Yeah. No, it was good to see. Mina Shirakawa was in the second match against Hanan. Yeah, only a short little match, but a good introduction for her. She, I think, will add a lot.
And it'd be interesting to see where does she end up stable-wise.
Mm.
And are we going to see perhaps a new stable with the kind of vacuum of Tokyo Cyber Squad leaving us?
Yeah, interesting.
And then the other new member of the roster is the newest member of Donna Del Mondo, which was Natsumi Maki, but is going by a different name.
Indeed. Yeah, Natsupoi defeated Def Yama-san, your favourite. Well worth checking out Def Yama-san. She's got a sort of kiss tribute gimmick. It's really cool. It's fun to watch.
Death basically has kiss makeup and dresses like a early 2000s backyard wrestler who bought all their gear from High Spots. So highspots.com is a website which still exists, but was in the early 2000s where all the indie wrestlers and backyarders bought their gear.
Yeah, so subsequently everybody looked kind of similar. But yeah, no, that's a good evaluation there. But yeah, Natsupoi joining DDM, bringing that stable up to 5. And what that also means is that they are now competitive across all divisions in the same way that Queen's Quest are. So prior to this show, they didn't have anybody that was eligible for the high speed title. Now Natsupoi fills that void.
Fantastic. Yeah. I'm very excited to sort of see more of... I'm excited to see much more of Izumi and defending the belt, hopefully, against her in the future.
Can we just have a quick second, if we can, on the tag title match? Because also from the Donna Del Mundo stable is Emeka, who I just think is fantastic. She's quite tall. I think she goes by the nickname of Jumbo Princess. But not unlike Julia, she's got real stage presence, but also just incredible facial expressions. Like, she's so much fun to watch because she's beating the crap out of somebody, but then she'll turn and give you that sort of nicest pie smile. She's just wonderful and had a really good, strong showing in the five-star Grand Prix. And I could see her eventually usurping Julia as the leader of DDM. Big call.
As stables tend to operate.
Indeed, absolutely. But yeah, look, I love this show. I'd go as far as to say it's the best show that I've seen this year.
I would have to agree. Yeah, there was so much good stuff on here. Stuff that I can see myself wanting to revisit as well. Like, I think there's a lot on here that the three top title matches and the opener, I think I would like to rewatch. Yeah,
100%.
Like, even now, like, I could probably, you know, once we're done here, I could be like, oh, you know, sod editing the podcast. I want to watch these matches back now we've been talking about them. That's all right, I'll just pull another all-nighter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So if you do want to check that one out, Stardom World is the place to do so. It is a streaming service. Do check it out. I think it's something like 799 yen or similar.
Word of warning with Japanese wrestling streaming services, you get billed for the whole month from whenever you sign up, and then it renews on the first of every month. So if you joined up today, you would pay from now till the end of October, and then it would renew on the first. So basically, if you're going to join to get the most bang for your buck, you want to join up on the first of the month. Yep.
Sound advice. Stardom World, certainly for these shows, didn't have any commentary.
But then they don't do English commentary anyway, so it's immaterial, isn't it?
Well, unless
really?
You can get subtitles. Yeah, so it may be worth having a bit of a companion sheet with you when you're watching the show, just so you know who's who. That's easily done. There's lots of good resources out there. But yeah, it's certainly worth your time.
And we're back with our roundup of the news for the week, which is going to be fast and furious as always. There's always heaps of stuff that's been happening out there in the elsewhere section in the independent wrestling world. First off, one of the big things is EC3 appears to be heading to Ring of Honor.
Nice, nice.
So he's going to be working, it seems, for both ROH and Impact. There was a little video that premiered at the end of this week's Pure Tournament episode of ROH TV that shows that he's on his way. Speaking of the Pure Tournament, they just had the finals of the first round where PJ Black beat Tony Deppen and Hot Sauce Tracy Williams beat Russ Taylor to finalize the semi-finals.
Is that Russ Taylor?
Rust
Taylor. What a troll. Why would you call yourself that?
Ridiculous. So yeah, we're going to see in the semi-finals, it's going to be Jay Lethal taking on David Finlay and Jonathan Gresham taking on Matt Sydal.
Oof.
We're also going to see Fred Yehi taking on Tracy Williams and Josh Woods taking on PJ Black.
Man, Fred Yehi is in with a chance here, isn't he?
Very possibly. I could see him making it to the block finals.
Very good. Very good indeed.
At the very least.
Okay, so over in New Japan, they have recently announced that the annual World Tag League will be returning. But this year, this special, special year, it will be run concurrently with the Best of the Super Juniors Tour. That tournament had been cancelled back in May, but it will in fact appear this year. It is the 27th edition of that tournament. And quite excitingly, both tournaments will end up with the finals taking place from Nippon Bodokan Hall on December 11th. And as Chris Charlton pointed out, Chris Charlton, the New Japan historian and commentator, it's the first Best of the Super Juniors final in the Budokan in 21 years.
The World Tag League will probably benefit from being a bit condensed.
Massively. Massively.
New Japan are not known for their strong tag team division. So the fact that they persist in running a tag team tournament every year for their heavyweights flies in the face of good sense, I think.
Yeah, but actually this year I'm quite looking forward to it.
Do we know any of the team? Have any of the teams been announced yet?
They haven't yet, no, no.
Speaking of tournaments, it's still tournament season in the US, and Black Label Pro just ran their TurboGrap 16 tournament. One of the people we've been talking about already this evening, and we both love a lot, happened to win, none other than Alex Shelley. So Yay! He won the tournament and took the BLP Midwest title home with him as well. He beat none other than Kylie Rae, in the one of your favourites, in the opening round.
Very good. I must hunt that down. I believe that's available on IWTV. So if you've that's got right. that app, do check that out. Going south of the border to Mexico in AAA, Auto Luchas is the new show that AAA are running. So it's a socially distanced show. It's drive-through wrestling. So you bring your car up, you don't get out of your car, the ring is set up, there's this very cool set and rig. It's actually very impressive looking, I thought, the whole thing. You've got the honking horns throughout. Yeah, we can kind of do about that maybe. It's very cool anyway. It's a great aesthetic, really interesting. I urge you to check it out. And you can do so for free over on the AAA Facebook page. If you only watch one match from the most recent set, look out for Laredo Kid versus Octagon Jr. That was genuinely a very, very good match. Well worth your time.
I'm going to have to watch that then.
Boom.
In somewhat sad news, ECW, WWE wrestling legend Jazz has announced she's now retired. She's wrestled her last match.
Oh, gosh, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's called it a day thanks to the pandemic, unfortunately.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, well, our current NWA Women's Champion Thunder Rosa had to vacate her Tokyo Yoshi Pro International Princess title due to the ongoing travel restrictions between America and Japan due to the coronavirus pandemic. So an unfortunate one there. TJPW are going to be running their own tournament to find a new champion, and that will conclude at Wrestle Princess, one of the shows that we will in fact be covering here on the podcast. And in one final bit of news, Lions Break Crown, which we covered on last week's episode, reaches its conclusion tonight as the show goes out Friday. Danny Limelight is in the final against Clark Connors, and I had the privilege of speaking to Mr. Limelight the other day. A very nice chap indeed. That interview is now up on insidetheropes.com. If you head over to the New Japan section, you will find it there. So do enjoy.
So that about does it for this week's edition of The Wrestling Podcast. Thank you for joining Liam and I. Next week, we are going to be doing a special dedicated to the collective events that are running this weekend. That is Friday the 9th, 10th, and 11th. And we're going to be covering the Bloodsport event that's happening, as well as the Shimmer show that's happening over that weekend. And we're going to try and cover as many other shows as we can watch from that weekend, time permitting.
Yeah, and we encourage you to watch along too. If you have a look over at Fight TV, you can order the events individually, or I believe there is a bundle package as well where you can buy everything for one set fee.
12 shows over 3 days.
Oof. Oh my gosh.
The collective is basically is a group of promotions coming together that would usually use one venue in over WrestleMania weekend, blockbook one venue, run a whole bunch of shows as a collective. And where that couldn't happen this year, they've pulled together once more and are going to be running in Indiana.
Yep. Very excited about that. Some really good looking matches on tap. And for MMA fans out there, breaking news as we record, Chael P. Sonnen, the former UFC middleweight, is going to be appearing at Bloodsport also. So very much looking forward to seeing what the American gangster is going to do.
I want a DC run in.
Mate, I'd love it if DC ran in. DC and Ariel, do you see they're feuding with Booker T?
I did not see this.
For another time. There we go. So in the meantime, people, stay happy, stay safe, and enjoy the graps.